Well, hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Dog Show Drive with Wayne and Will. I'm Wayne Cavanaugh.
And I'm Will, and it's been a long time. I'm glad we're back.
It's good to be back, bud. I just wish we had better topics to cover today that weren't so disturbing. Anyway, we have a lot to talk about with the sport and some dog show stuff as well. It's sensitive material. If these are things that are disturbing to you, please consider waiting till the next episode. It does include discussion of sexual abuse. Here we go. All that and more right here on the Dog Show. Good morning, Will. How are you, bud?
I'm well, Wayne. How are you this morning?
I'm shaking, and I don't feel like I'm just not. It's been a rough week.
It's been a rough couple of days. But you know, we got to get through it. We got to get through it.
And Will and I talked about this before, whether we should approach the subject. We have to.
Yeah, you can't. It's an elephant in the room, and it's got to be spoken about. That's the only way we're going to get through it.
This is related to charges, alleged behavior of an AKC judge. As far as it's reported in the indictment and everything else, it's not something that happened at dog shows to juniors or anybody else. Fortunately, we don't know that, but this is simply an exchange of child pornography at this point. From what the indictment says and what the reports say. Everybody's proven innocent until proven guilty. I suppose we need to say that too. But this is just shaking the world.
It's shaking our world. It's
you know, these allegations are monstrous and unthinkable. And it was preceded a month ago because it's a less high profile individual in the sport who he and his roommate were charged with child pornography and bestiality involving dogs. You know, 8 counts of child pornography, 6 of bestiality. That's a separate case, but it happens to, you know, point out that these things are not, and I don't think it's limited to the sport.
No, there's no question. It's not limited. It's a worldwide dilemma that's been for years.
It has. And probably there's more of it now because these guys are getting caught because they use the internet and to exchange this information and video. And the FBI is pretty good about becoming and pretending to be one of them. And it's been, you know, we're catching more. I assume that years ago, before the internet, when people didn't, you know, weren't exchanging these things freely on the internet, across state lines, country lines, whatever lines, it wasn't easy. It wasn't so easy to catch them. And it's probably still not easy.
It's still not easy. You read about, I think it's Ashton Kutcher that goes, that he does that, doesn't he? Is it Ashton Kutcher that heads up that? He has a private group that tries to look into human trafficking. But it's I don't know, Wayner. It's a disturbing topic and time, and it's hard to talk about because it touches so close to home. But they're out there, you know. It's these people are so insanely genius that they evade us their entire lives.
I knew this guy, knew him well.
I could say hello to him. I didn't know him at all. But how many times do we walk by people on the street? They're probably, who knows if they're as demented, but not right. And we just don't know it. You don't know who you're talking to. You don't know. Background checks, I think, are really important. We talked about it earlier because it will come up with previous convicted offenders.
Wouldn't have done a damn thing in this case.
Not a damn thing. He was too insanely genius for that. They evaded detection their entire life. Yeah. And then when they started trusting people, that's what got them caught, because they wanted to share their demented lifestyle with others, like-minded people, and that's what caught this person. So,
and I want to say that the other cases that I mentioned, there are now 4 individuals in that group that have been
charged. Those are convicted. We know those.
Yeah, and I do not know if there's any connection between the two. I'm not implying that at all. It just happened right at the same time.
7 degrees of separation in this world, though. So
yeah, really. Well, it wouldn't have helped in Adam's case. It wouldn't have helped in the case of this individual. The background checks wouldn't. But it raises the alarm. It reminds us that background checks would help in some situations.
Yes.
An AKC rep years ago, who's convicted now, as I understand.
Yeah.
You know, we've got to be more careful. And I can tell you that I've heard so many adjectives. My phone didn't stop yesterday. So many adjectives describing how we...
In the past AKC rep, this is...
Yes. Is, not a current one.
This is 100 years ago.
Former. But it reminds me that the adjectives that I heard over the last 24 hours have been... disgusted, anger, sickened, all that. One that stood out to me was shaken, because I can tell you, I was shaken.
Oh,
I couldn't drive.
Yeah, and you told a story earlier on, and it's still, I'm thinking about it now, and it's sending chills. Like, I just can't. It just,
got that feeling. I saw evil in his eyes.
Yeah, this is a hard one, Wainer.
Yeah. Well, there's something has to be done.
Right.
Some sort of checks and balances. And of course, this is true for everywhere we go. But let me tell you, we can all say, which is true, this happens way beyond our sport. Our sport is not the reason.
There are deeper reasons for these people than dog shows.
Absolutely. But it doesn't mean it's not a good wake-up call to do something.
Right.
And I don't mean anger, I mean action. It also doesn't mean that the public isn't going to perceive it differently. For example, in the federal indictment, it mentions Meet the Breeds and it mentions Orlando. I want to be clear. The federal indictment does not say anything happened at these events. It was back in the hotel during these events.
Off hours. And they used their time to send things
to exchange from
a dog show event.
On the internet. But there's not a picture I've seen in the news. And my goodness, living near Chicago, it's all I see. Every picture's got a win picture. Or with the ribbon and the dog show judge,
right?
And the veterinarian too, but the dog show judge. And when the public hears this over and over, and if they start to link it with the other thing on the news, I'm not saying the situation was linked,
right?
On the news, the world's going to think the sport's just a bunch of perverts, and we've got to do better to make sure that that's not the public perception. I don't know who fielded the calls at AKC, but I hope they know what the hell they were doing.
Yeah.
And I hope they did.
I've always stated in my seminars, I've always stated that dog shows are a microcosm of the real world. And they really are.
They reflect society as anything does. Now, by the way, Will and I happen to know these things happen in hockey. And there's been some high profile cases of late in hockey. Not abuse with minors.
Well, minors, but young,
not child pornography.
Right. It's not. It's
these cases that have surfaced at the top, and now you got hockey moms everywhere, worrying about their kids. I don't know how handlers are going to get help. This had nothing to do with handlers and help, but junior showmanship, how is that going to be affected? Aren't people going to be a little, you know? And I also want to say this because I know I can. I feel horrible for our gay community because they didn't do a damn thing. And I hope to hell we're not going to paint them all with the same brush.
Yeah.
Because it's unfair. It's totally unfair. And I can see it now. Everybody who happens to be gay is now going to, people are going, oh, you know, they knew them. They were friends. Bullshit. This could have happened to straight people. It happens to straight
people every day. Oh, my God. You know how many friends Ted Bundy had? You're kidding me.
I don't want to hear anybody.
They cannot go down that road.
Yeah. They fooled us, and yeah, they fooled their gay friends and
they fooled everyone. They fooled their family, probably. Like, give me a break. It better not go down that road, Wayner.
It's got nothing to do with that. And if I hear it one more time,
keyboard warriors that want to go down that route, they just better stay off the social media.
Well, this is just, you know, Will and I were talking about before we started. Do we have anything to talk about besides this? That we do, but the problem is it's so in our heads right now.
Right. And it has to be talked about. It's
I've got a condo association meeting I've got to go to tonight. And quite frankly, my head's not in it.
Yeah.
I'm just so shaken by this. Yeah,
it's a tough thing. Like I didn't know this individual at all. I could maybe say hi as we passed by, but it's our world. It's our world that this person.
It's our family.
Right. And it hits home. AKC has done, you know, they've done things. They've done their best to look after people. And it's same with the CKC up here. But we may have to be even more vigilant. We may have to, like, crossing the border, and you may not know it, but when you cross the border, you're getting background checked every time. And if there's one thing you're not getting across, you know, you're not. Yeah. I was talking to a guy last week because he was having an issue with the booth next to him. He actually drew his gun because the alarm went off, and I'd never seen that in my life. And I crossed the border a lot, and he drew his gun. And he came back. And he said it happens all the time. He said because people will lie to the guard and think that's going to work. Yeah, well, I've never been arrested. No, I've never done this. Well, all they have to do is press in Joe Schmo and their whole history pops up. So,
yeah. And that's true. These background checks, depending on the depth of them, can take a little while. But right now, with our technology,
no.
2 seconds will tell you if they've been arrested.
He even said to me, he even said most of the guards are trained to say, we'll know if you're lying.
Yes.
We'll know if you're lying. Doesn't matter if you have a good smile and you talk your way through. Mm-hmm. We'll know if you're lying.
Now, of course, that gets into the argument of the degree of the crime, right?
Oh, yes. Because once you're convicted, it's on your history. It's on your record. Yeah. Like we talked earlier, an 18-year-old boy and a 17-year-old girlfriend, he could be convicted, right?
Yes. And on a sex offender list for the rest of his life by a birthday of one. Not even on the same planet.
No.
And I want to stress allegations here.
Right. We have to say it. We have to do that. You're right. Absolutely. We have to stress allegations.
Proven guilty, but these allegations are horrific, diabolical.
And that's the term, diabolical. Like it's. That's it.
You think you know somebody, you know?
Yeah.
You know. Anyway, my hearts go out to everybody involved. And also, you know, our family's been wounded and we didn't do it. And we need to stand up and say we should do something about it. We also need to stand up and say, you know, clearly we're not going to blame others, associated people, friends, enemies, anybody else, or any particular group of people, because we all know there's a whole lot of great people in our sport who happen to be gay and some that happen to be straight. It's got nothing to do with this. Quit drawing those lines. And if you see it on the internet, shut it down. Sickening. Anyway.
This is exhausting.
It is.
It really is. It's mentally exhausting.
I didn't sleep last night. I've interviewed this person. Dog shows. It sounds so insignificant. I'm leaving
it does.
Thursday.
It does.
Leaving Thursday to go do the Pointer National.
That's a big deal. You should be very honored that you're judging the Pointer National being your breed. And I hope you get a wonderful entry. And
it's a big entry. It's 156. I remember when I first won it in 1980, we broke the 100 barrier. It was 102 or something, 107. It's certainly grown since then. A lot of it will have to do with venues and geographical location, of course.
Oh, there's no question. Yeah.
But people will travel from all over the place to get to a national.
Especially if it's in a good venue. Like look at our Beagle Club, Aldi, Virginia. That's not accessible for a lot of people, but people love the site so much that they'll just venture to it. It becomes,
The smartest thing the Beagle Club did is every 5 years. Because if you went every year, you might just get sick of flying.
Right. But now you look forward to it.
Trees and no parking. But now it's so special. It's like Mars and Essex. It's growing. Do it every 5 years, right? Yeah. But the Pointer National is in conjunction with all breeds. And this is always a big topic of discussion. Is the entry up because it's in conjunction with all breeds? And by the way, on this location, there are five all breeds going on already. There's a 1 day pause, I think, and then there's five more. So you can sit, if you're a handler or owner with plenty of time on your hands, you can sit there for 12 days and go to 10 dog shows. What the hell? I want to be a dog and go to 10 dog shows in a row. This will be great and exciting for me. No, it won't.
No.
And quite frankly, I'll bet there's not a person that's competing there that has to do that for their living that's going to say, boy, I wish we could do this all the time.
I go to shows and I set up with that a lot of times, and I watch and think, oh my gosh, this is exhausting just watching.
It absolutely is. When this particular facility, I've never been to, but I hear it's great. It's the birthplace of Secretariat, so it's got to be great.
Oh.
It's a separate building for the National. So I plan on wandering up the hill or over the field or wherever it is, because I haven't been there, I don't know, to go venture into the all breed. And of course, there's no wire hair Wieslers entered, Will.
Oh.
And there's no Boykin Spaniels entered. The two breeds I need points in, ladies and gentlemen. If you know anybody.
We get a wire hair entry up here sometimes.
Of course you do. I'm going to have to fly up to Canada to see three of them so I can get a point. I've seen this breed for...
I saw a Boykin once walking on the street up here, though.
I remember that story. And everybody, you all knew what it was.
Oh, where's the Boykin?
But you'd be better than some judges who point to the Boykin and say, bring out the American Water Spaniel.
No, the Field Spaniel. Bring out that weird-looking Field Spaniel.
I always thought it would be fun in the groups where the judge had to write the breed name in. It wasn't there for you on a sheet.
You'd be surprised. I once won a group. I was in the ring, and the judge had already made the cut, and I was the only spaniel in the ring. I had American Cocker at the time, and the judge said, first will be the Springer, so I knew I was the closest thing, so I walked out. I took it.
That's what Janie, when we were starting a new Irish setter back in the Forsyth days when I worked there, I remember vividly this judge pointing to some owner-handler didn't have a famous dog, but a real good one. And they happened to be right next to Janie, who ran up on the podium. Yeah. Hey, who's going to going to tell Janie? No, I didn't mean that. No one is going to tell Janie. You. But yeah, it would be fun to have the judges write down the 200 breeds we have now. And I think
I couldn't write down the 200 breeds we have now.
I think I've mentioned this before, but ironically enough, I was once, when I worked at the AKC, on the committee to review the judge's license when they came in for approval, Jim Edwards and Mayor Beth and I and Ronald Rella. And I remember if they came in and it was, if Dalmatian was spelled I-O-N, out!
Out!
Out! If you don't know where they came from and how it's spelled, out! We don't need you. So yeah, let's make them write it in the book.
Oh my gosh, could you imagine?
Spaniel brown type. Low brown spaniel dog.
but with all the new breeds, it's hard. I remember being in the group one time, and it was the herding group, and I had to finish lapping, and Dougie was in there with his Icelandic sheepdog.
Oh, jeez.
And we're at the end, the judge was making his cut, and the judge got in front of us two. Instead of saying that, he went, YouTube. YouTube.
That's beautiful. Yeah, you know, we have 200 breeds, ladies and gentlemen. 200. I just wrote an article that could cause controversy. Me? Never. And it's and we've talked about this, Will. It's about how it's a question, absolutely a question. Do we breed for the judging pool that we have? All right, follow me here. Some might suggest that in England, where there are fewer than 30 all breed championship shows, I think it's 26, but I'll just say under 30 shows a year, championship shows a year, there are large breed entries in every breed. Accordingly, the clubs can hire breed specialists. Now, I'm not saying in every single breed all the time, but
more regular than we can here.
Way more regularly than we can. And if it's not, if they're not a cocker person doing cockers, they're a cocker person doing springers and other spaniels, right? So it's more likely that you're going to get someone familiar with your, really familiar with your breed. Some might say that the dogs in England have extraordinary breed type, but maybe they don't have that AKC group winning side gate and shape. And
well, it's not even just that, it's running gear. Like they have some breeds over there that are extreme in type and we love looking at them. And then they take a step and we go, oh,
I'm glad you said it. Cause it's true.
It's true. It's true.
And you know, how many times have I gone over there and I'm going to buy that pointer. I'm like, ah, oh, Jesus.
I remember the three of us in Ireland and we were in different parts of the building. Mark Threffel and I and you were in our we're in different parts, and all of a sudden we all converged on this one dog because we saw it from over top, and it was lovely stand, but we got close to it.
Now, I'm not saying on the record here, I am not saying that there aren't dogs from England.
Oh God, no.
That are absolutely sound, great on their legs, and have breed type. We know that because we see them all the time.
Right.
I'm just saying
they rise above. We all see those.
It skews a little bit, okay?
Right. It's just because they're
you might not have the emphasis on the nuances of tiny little veins in the ears and bee sting tails and all those little things that true breed specialists would get excited about. So we have judges that judge 200 breeds. They do over there too, by the way, but they don't judge all the shows. Now with almost 2,000 shows instead of 30 here a year, you can, and there's three of these entered. Some breeds have no entries. A lot of breeds have no entries. 1, 2, 3, 1, 0, 1. When you have that, you couldn't possibly expect anybody to hire a breed specialist for every breed. You're going to get the Great Dane guy doing Papillons and so on. And I'm not saying these judges cannot judge these breeds and don't
like exactly
on all the breeds. I'm just saying, could it be that our judges put more emphasis on legs, on movement, and slightly skew less debris type. And I can tell you, if I'm doing one of these owner handler groups or a bred by group, and it's a breed I've never heard of before, can I judge it based on basic structure and construction? Yeah, that's what I do. And that's what everybody does. You've never seen one before. What else are you going to do? Right. You read the standard, you take it down the back, take it inside, and you can make an assessment of a good dog that way.
Right.
It's not ideal, but if it's the only one you've ever had the opportunity to see in some one of these ancillary groups, that's all you got, right? So that's the extreme version of someone with five groups judging a breed they're not super familiar with. They can still do it and do it well, but they're not going to be focused on the specifics of breed type.
Right. They might miss a few nuances of breeds. Right. It becomes a general evaluation.
Yeah. And this is like saying, you know, all blondes are dumb. I understand that. And that's clearly not true.
How about grays?
No hairs are brilliant, Will.
I just have undercoat now. I don't have any. No guard hair.
It'll come back.
Gray undercoat.
It's got too much warm weather up there. When it chills up, Anyway, the point is, it's a question. It's not my answer at all. If that all follows, could it be that the reason we see so much more of really profound type that makes you just go, oh my God, Ed Crufts, for example, is it because breeders subconsciously or consciously know the judging pool is going to be often, they're going to have a better chance than we are of showing to a breed specialist or a group specialist? So they do breed for those things. And over here, our chances of getting those breed specialists are far lower. So do we breed for more of the all-around dog with good legs and showmanship? I don't know the answer, but it's a great discussion to have. You want to have a good discussion with someone who really knows dogs and has been to many countries. That's a discussion you can have. It can be
as a pass handle dog, and you'll know this as well. We had dogs in our string that were group dogs.
Yeah.
That we knew we'd never win a national specialty win, but we could probably win any group in the country with.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. That's exactly my point.
Yeah.
It raises the question, right? It's a pretty cool topic. The more I think about it, the more I want to think more about it.
And you're right, because there was an instance this weekend. I was in Edison, New Jersey this weekend. There were some really good entries there. And some breeds have changed so dramatically to the movement side of the spectrum that the dogs that stick out in your head when you look down the line look so odd. In a lot of cases, they're the one.
Yes, they look so odd
that they're being overlooked because of that.
Yep. Yeah. I had an instance not too long ago where I had two sporting dogs. One shown by an amateur owner handler who had extraordinary breed type. The other one, but you know, it was rounded and croup more than it should be. It wasn't, you know, stand up show dog. And I had a super show dog who had type, nothing like this one as far as type, but had great legs and great movement. And you go back and forth and back and forth. I'll think about that one for a long time. And I talked to a breeder who watched and said the person with the show dog was concerned that you took too long to make that decision. It was obvious. And she said to him, no, it wasn't. The one that you thought was an ugly little brown dog at the end of the line, it had more breed type than your dog had. It had too many structural faults. So you have to look at that and appreciate that. Can I do that in every breed? No. No one can. No one can do it in 200 breeds. Can they judge really well in 200 breeds? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But are we breeding more for the general dog here? And does that, when taken to extremes, become generic dogs?
It's true. Like I was talking earlier, but it's, and winning has a lot to do with it, because now you look in a certain breed rings and you'll see all those winning factors that you're not fond of. You'll see like big round bones and big hull and everything's fluffed up and everything. And then the one that is classic in your eye is overlooked because it's surrounded by seven apples with one orange in the center. You know,
right.
it's,
Right.
So, right. And then you can see how some people fall for it, but you have to shake it off and think about who you want to start a breeding program with, which dog you want to start with.
I made that mistake, and there's one I that'll be in my head forever. It didn't mean a whole lot, but it meant a whole lot to me. I had
granted, now that it does mean a whole lot to you, it's probably not going to happen again.
It won't happen again.
Right.
But there were two sporting dogs. One had more breed type than the other, but the other one had plenty of breed type. The one was way better on its legs, and the other one was so close behind, there were almost sparks coming off its hocks. On other days, I would have to, like, I've talked judging with Doug and Jamie a couple weeks ago, Doug Johnson, Jamie Hubbard, who I tremendous respect for as judges. And Doug said to me, because I was doing a breed that he had done the day before, and he said, you're just going to have to be forgiving. And I didn't know what he meant until I got in there. I had a hunch what he meant, but it's true. Sometimes the dog with sparks flying off its hocks, because it's so close behind, might just be the better dog with one major fault. And you don't want to throw the baby with the bathwater.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
But we go back and forth on those things in our world. And again, you know, can things be taken to an extreme in breed type? Yeah.
Well, caricatures, yeah. There's no question.
In one of my breeds, in pointers, a slight impression of a dish is a good thing. It's a great thing. But when the nose turns up so much, because they really want dish, and now they've got this nose sticking straight up in the air, drowned on point.
Almost boxerish looking, you know, yeah. I've seen them.
And by the way, they forgot the legs when they're so busy working on that. So there are extremes in exaggerated type. And extremes and exaggerated generic. It's both ends of the spectrum, and you're looking for something in the middle. And again, we have dogs with great breed type that happen to be great movers here. They do too. And those are the dogs that I hope get the top awards most of the time. But you'll definitely see dogs over there that win, that we go, that would never win in our country. And I guarantee you, they're looking at breeds over here going, I can never win an
Oh, for sure. I remember. We had Edison, there was quite a few foreign judges there. And they're, you know, it was interesting to watch them, the way they look at things. And I was watching one breed, and this one dog caught my eye. And I said to somebody, that's a good meat and potatoes dog. That's a good dog. Yeah. Oh, but this, and this. I said, sometimes a breed needs a good meat and potato dog, yeah. You know, and you can't overlook that. And I almost said to somebody, I didn't say it, but I almost said, if that dog was with that person, you probably wouldn't even think that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Good, honest dogs are hard to come by.
Oh, and they're breeds need them tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
absolutely need them in the gene pool. There's no doubt.
Especially in the state of some dogs. Now you're happy. I'm telling you, if I was judging somewhere, I'd be happy that dog was in my ring. You know. Yeah.
I can tell you there years ago, probably longer ago than I want to remember, there was a group of us who had brought some pointers over from England. And Mr. Bradley had this extraordinary bitch, way ahead of her time, just gorgeous breed type. So much about her that just screamed pointer. She wasn't great in her legs, but she was bred to a dog who now could have a hard time. We have a hard time, maybe even finishing. He'd probably finish. Any dog can finish these days. But he wouldn't be a best in show winner, certainly right. At some of the biggest shows in the country. and everyone, why would you possibly ruin this extraordinary breed type that you have? Because this bugger is great on his legs. He also has body. He was robust. He was an athlete. He had a head and a tail that looked nothing like the breed. He had a skirt and he was long and all that, whatever. But he was a good dog. He was a real good dog. And it didn't make sense for most people that breeding occurred. I had nothing to do with it, by the way. That breeding occurred. And one of the most famous top-winning pointers of all time came from that litter. You need good, honest dogs sometimes.
Yeah, bring things back to basics, you know, it's back to reality, really. I mean, it's funny because you look at, we were talking with this a couple of days ago, I think, You look at what Australia has done with certain breeds, and they've taken the extreme breed types in England or UK and bred them to our show dogs, and they've got them right in the middle, and they're beautiful, right?
Mm-hmm. And they've done it consistently for quite a few years. Many breeds. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, that's the experiment. That's the melting pot down there. And then when those dogs come back up here into the gene pool, you get some, well, there's one right now that really hit all boxes and tick all boxes and and are a great contributor to the gene pool. You know, the article is about two things happen in early March. The swallows come back to Capistrano from Argentina, and the Americans come back from Crufts, lighter in the wallet, heavier in the suitcase, and full of, I hope, a new vision of their breed. It's a great place to go to remind you how important breed type is, because you'll see it all over the place. But if you bring back a dog, is it one over there, or you liked it over there? There's one thing I always ask myself before I pull the trigger and buy a dog over there, and I bought more than a few over there. If I was in Kansas in a fairgrounds with a dark and dingy barn, and this dog walked into the American bred class, the same dog that I'm doing jumping jacks over here that I see at Crufts, would that still be a dog? I'm like, I have got to buy that dog. Take yourself out of the context. Because when you walk into Crufts, they give you these rose-colored Crufts glasses. You don't even know they're on you, but they're on you. So everything you see is better and bigger and more beautiful, because it's, you know, it's unique. It's the incredible, amazing, wonderful feeling you get when you walk through those doors of Crufts. And sometimes you see things better than you think they might be. But really think about, stroll that in the ring over here and do anything with it, you know?
Yeah.
Now, you may know that. You may know it can't walk, or it can't whatever. It has a bed, whatever. But it still might have that extraordinary breed type that you need in your gene pool. Then you bring them back and know you're not going to show it, but you're going to.
Well, don't expect the world with it. You know, it was an interesting conversation. I don't know if you noticed, there was a video that came out after, Crufts, breed winners and golden retrievers. And it was funny reading the messages. Some were like so pro, and some were like, oh my God, that's so horrible. You know, it's like, and I watched it, and you have to see the merit in those dogs. You have to see the merit, the virtues in those dogs. You know, you may not be exactly what you want, but you see the squareness, you see the pigment, you see their coat, you see their angles.
And their heads. And their heads. Like, and their eyes, not little slanty eyes.
But some of the comments were so fun. I had enjoyment just one evening, instead of watching the game, I just, oh, look at this.
Closer score. And by the way, a very good friend of ours, Will, very good friend, is in the situation right now. His golden either doesn't place in a class of five or wins the breed from the classes. He happens to run into a breed specialist, or at least a sporting dog person, who looks and goes, that's what they're supposed to look. I know they're the odd man out, right? Like you mentioned before, they don't look like anything else. So the judges are like, well, I don't know about this. You know, I am in fact a Basset breeder, but my wife did breed Maltese, and somehow I got this license, but.
And she knows someone that had a golden. Yeah.
But those are the kinds that win all the time. Must be the right ones. Nay, not always. But yeah, that certainly happens. I would be proud to have a dog that either won the breed from the classes or went fifth out of five. I would be proud to have that dog, because I got a pretty good idea that that's a good one. Maybe not going to win groups over here, but that's the kind you want to breed. And you should, you know. So the larger question is, do we subconsciously breed for the gene pool, for the judges pool that we know we're going to encounter subconsciously, slightly, maybe?
Sure. Like here's the breed winner at Crufts. I think she went third in group.
Yeah.
You're going to bring her over here?
Not going to win with her.
You're going to win 1 in 20, you know, maybe.
Yeah. And the national. You'll win the national.
Well, it depends. Depends who's doing it.
You know, That's true. Mm-hmm. You know, people complain about nationals are judged by either breed specialists, or sometimes they get an all-arounder thrown in there. Ah, it's horrible. They should have an all-arounder. I think they should, for this very reason, Will. Sometimes you need an all-arounder to go, okay, we remember basic structure, ladies and gentlemen. Then yeah. The breeder comes in and says, okay, type. So at least there's some balance in the opinions. I don't mind that at all. I don't mind that at all. And that good all-arounder, two or three group or whatever it is, Judge, that can find a dog, a good, honest dog, you need that judge. You need that judge because that might be the dog you need to breed your fancy ones to.
Yeah.
So it's all good, Will.
So you're off to the Pointer National. That'll be fun.
I am. Fortunately, I have two guiding lights with me, my son and his wife. So if I go off the rails, they'll be able to reel me in.
Dad.
No, don't do it. Don't do it. They said, I can't wait to see you, Dad. And I said, I can't wait to see you, son. And I'm sure it's going to be before 8 o'clock because after that, it's good night, Irene.
Yeah, oh, exactly. Yeah. Oh, I was just in Seattle. I was in Seattle. I did a handling seminar for the Mount Rainier Yorkshire Terrier Club, Molly Speck.
I love that you said Mount Rainier.
Mount Rainier? How they pronounce it down
America. There? Mount Rainier or something.
I don't know. Anyway, the Yorkshire Terrier Club of Mount Rainier.
You've got the French.
Mount Rainier.
You have the knowledge from being up where you live there in Quebec.
But it was wonderful. They put on a great set. Oh, I don't know if I told you. Guess who I judged the competition?
Yes, you did tell me. I forget.
John Wilcox. Yeah. He did a great job, and it was so great. I hadn't seen John in years. And I'll tell you, he went out there and Tammy made him wear a tie and jacket, which I guess he hasn't worn in 20 years. But I'll tell you, he looks so natural out there. There's someone that should be judging dogs.
Yeah. But doesn't want to go so through the natural bullshit in the application process.
Yeah.
There's plenty of them out there, Will. I'm about to be one of them, but I don't get damn wire interviews. Not damn, I love wire interviews lists. I really
just
do.
Finding them.
I told Brody, you know, if you're looking for our son, if you're looking for another
breed, not our son,
pointers, yeah, oh yeah, it's Sherilyn. That would be painful. But if you're looking for another breed besides pointers to breed, wire Vizslas are cool dogs.
Oh, and if you see a good one, you know it.
And their temperaments, I like everything about them. Functional dogs. But anyway, I can't find enough of them to be an expert in them.
Right, for the application. We have a few up here. I'm exposed to them. We've had some really nice ones up here, so it's nice to see. But then again, I wasn't done my story yet. After the seminar, I went back to Sherry and Daryl's, you know, and we went to a Kraken game. And it was fun.
we can do all the referee signals. Well, that might be a show, right?
Yeah.
We just have someone behind us, and whenever we're doing interference, you know, whenever we slash each other, you know, we could do it all.
And then we'll get the Will and Wayne timeout. We know they're low and long. Timeout.
Jersey was, I think it was Wes McCauley that.
He's good.
There was a fight.
Said, 2 minutes
for
fighting. He did it once. He got such great response. He does it all the time now.
The best. Anyway, yeah, the Kraken are a team we're both fans of for no apparent reason except we have friends that live there, and also it's a great name, great colors, new team in a great city.
Oh,
and
the arena is amazing.
The best barn, the prettiest barn.
It's an amazing arena. So,
So there you have it. Well, I'm glad you had fun out there. I've got appointments. You know, we take care of my brother and his wife. It's a lot of driving to appointments, but even though it's incredibly, tough, I'll take the 10 minutes in the car with my brother, the 10 minutes with some idiot any day of the week, Will.
You just spend an hour with an idiot.
Yeah, it's true. Interference. Anyway, well, I know you had fun in Edison. We did mention dog shows.
Yeah. It was a tough one, and I'm glad you and I are still smiling. But, you know, we have to. I love this sport, and I don't want to see anything bad happen to it. And as all walks of life in this sport, we need to stick together and love each other.
Yes, and keep your eyes open.
Right.
If it feels weird, if you have a cringeworthy moment, and unfortunately I did at one point with one of those individuals, it probably means something.
Right.
Anyway, I hope you're all well and hope you're all safe and hope you're all thinking the positive things of the sport, because there's plenty of them.
There sure are. There sure are. You know.
Yeah. All right, bud.
All right.
Off I go.
All right, Wiener. I'll talk to you next week. Well, I'll talk to you in a few days, probably.
Yeah. Or in an hour. Yeah. All right.
All right.
Good night, everyone.
Yeah, stay safe, everybody, and we'll see you down the road.
Party on, Greg.
No way.
Way.
You gotta be paying attention, Doc.
Thanks for the thanks,
sir. So Ernie can use this in the blooper reel.
That's right.
We love you, Ernie.
Don't put that in, Ernie.
Quit taking yourself so damn seriously.
I'm gonna go.
Dude. Some extraordinary data things that are being done around the world.
Thanks, Ernie.
We didn't mention hockey either. Isn't that unbelievable?
Put that in, Doc. Yeah, they want to see it in a blueprint.
This is good. We're going to be here in a second, Wiener.
Don't lose it, Doc.
Hot.
Don't use that one, Doc.
Don't use that one, Doc.